You are listening to WFOD, friend to the hip hop community.
All right, here we go. Hello and welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. I am Mike. I'm joined, of course, by my co-host, the King of Pranks, the albino alligator popcorn bitch, Mr. Travis Hulse.
Hello, I'm here again.
Guys, coming up in a little bit, we're going to be talking to the owner of Ethereal Crack Ghost Tours, Mr. Tim Starnes is going to be on the program. We're looking forward to talking to him. Travis, do you think that that guy killed himself?
I feel like it's more fun to say no.
See, what he was, he's a pedophile guy.
And he was part of that whole, wasn't he part of that whole Clinton pizza shop pedophile ring?
The pizza thing, yeah. He did the pizza thing.
He did Pizzagate.
Yeah, and he had a plane, and apparently there was a lot of people who rode on the plane with him. And so everybody said, well, this guy is giving out plane rides. So all those people probably don't want him to spill the beans. And so
the beans being that they also loved pedophilia.
Right, right. Do you think that they all like pedophilia, Travis?
I mean, I don't know what's going on with these power, right? Like you look back at like the Bushes and all these people, and they were in like these secret societies, like the Skulls and things. What goes on? You can talk about it and you can say, you know, this weird elite society of people. When you think about them, you're thinking, oh, they're sacrificing, you know, young people to some weird god to gain power. But really, I mean, are they just sitting around playing D&D?
Maybe that's what drives a man, Travis. Like, the drive to succeed is to get to a level where you can have sex with children and get away with it. Like, Travis, if you have sex with a child, you're probably not going to get away with it. You know, you don't have the means.
No, people don't typically get away with those things.
Yeah, the kid will probably tell, and you don't have the funds to pay off the family to not prosecute you to the full extent of the law.
Right. I mean, a normal guy is not going to be Steven Tyler, where he was able to, like, didn't he, like, marry a 14-year-old or something like that, and her parents, like, totally signed off on it?
It's like a friend of his daughter's.
Yeah, and like he like married her or something, and like was dating her, and the parents were like, "Yeah, no problem, you're Steven Tyler."
Yeah, when you watch that HBO documentary, Travis, that's what the seemed to be the common thing with the parents is they were like, "Well, I mean, it was really cool that Michael Jackson was coming over and having dinner with us, and you know he'd invite me over to spend a week in his guest house," and they were starstruck,
right? Of course,
because this man he wrote. Beat it.
This Me Too stuff has came from men and women. I guess there's been a few cases, but mostly high powered men abusing that power, promising things, you know, like careers in show business.
But is
things,
that
like
the Harvey reason Weinstein to things. Get the power? Is that something ingrained in your being that you're like, oh,
I feel like don't you have to be a bad person in the first? I mean, I don't know. I've thought about this before. I feel like a lot of people get into politics with like good intentions. They really want to help their community and in their state and the country. And by the time you get to a certain point, you've been so corrupted that you've lost sight of what you wanted. So I guess I don't know if people are seeking power so they can abuse it, or if they just start to kind of become a different person and see what their power entitles them to do along the way until you get to that place where you're all powerful and you can literally get away with anything.
Having said that, that guy probably didn't kill himself, though.
I don't think he killed himself.
He's in a jail cell, and there was two cameras on him, both of which were off, and the two guards that were on him were both sleeping.
Well, wasn't there, before this actually happened, wasn't there a rumor that he was dead? I feel like, maybe I just made this up in my head, but I swear to Christ that before it was actually confirmed, like days before, or maybe even a week before, it was actually confirmed that he's, you know, quote unquote, killed himself, that he was dead in jail or before he went to jail. I swear that I had seen somewhere that there was like a death hoax on Epstein. And then however long later, oh, he killed himself.
Travis, I used to work at a storage facility for many, many years. I worked at this place. And so what happened was the guy smashed out the window with a rock.
Okay.
And stole the money.
As you do.
And so when I came in, there was no glass there. And so we watched the tape. We watched the guy smash out the glass and steal the money. And we shared the tape with the police, and the police took it. And later on, a coworker came over to watch the tape with me, and we accidentally went to the day before, where the resident manager at that location, like, did a test run stealing the money.
And, oh, like, boy.
We just watched it on tape. And, like, he went over to the video to watch to see what he looked like, to see if he looked different enough.
Did he not think that when he was done watching to see how he looked on the security tape that he should have maybe deleted it?
Well, I guess he couldn't figure out how to delete it, or he didn't think anybody'd go and look. But
But that's what security tapes are for. If you get robbed, you look at the tapes to see who robbed
you.
Yeah, but
who thinks to look at the night before?
Probably the manager would think to cover his. Criminals right. are so stupid. Batman was right.
So yeah, he changed shoes. He wore different shoes.
Did he hunch his back a little bit?
He was way faster with running through the door. So I narked on my coworker. I told the boss, and they.
Well, yeah, of course.
Well, what happened was, what they found out was, what he was doing is he was taking the deposits to the casino.
Oh, this is the plot of Empire Records.
Yeah. He was taking the deposits to the casino to try to double the deposit, and then he would keep his winnings and put the deposit back. Well, I mean, he lost.
Whoops, got in a hole.
And then, so the next day, all of that money he used to cover the deposit before. And so after a certain amount of time, something had to happen.
He was just trying to play catch up.
Yeah. So I'm telling that story to get to, like, I mean, you can't just get away with it forever, can you?
We used to joke about that. When I was like a delivery driver on a truck, we used to get paid in cash and checks and things like that too. And some days you'd end the day with, I mean, a good $1,500, $2,000 in your little baggie or whatever that you would bring back and deposit and whatever. And we used to joke about that, because we'd even had casinos on our routes where we'd be like, oh, it should take this, try to double it, and then, you know, put it back. And then you'd never actually do that unless you were like a gambling addict. Like, you know, whoever thinks they're going to win at the casino? Like, anytime I've ever gone to a casino, I always set a budget. It's like, I'm going to lose $100 when I go to the casino.
Oh, yeah. You go over there with money that you fully expect to lose.
Yeah. That's like when you go to Vegas. You don't go to Vegas being like, ooh, I can't wait to come home with a crisp $10,000 bill. You expect to be like, hey, that money in my bank account, that won't be there when I come back home.
Travis, God bless his soul, but our good friend Napier, who used to be a co-host of this program, when we used to go over to the Ameristar Casino after a night at Pizza Hut, what he would do, and he had the greatest philosophy of any gambler I've ever known, Travis. He would walk in with the amount of money that he brought with him to lose, and he would put it on either red or black right away.
Just get it over with, like peeling off a Band-Aid?
Right. Whatever he brought, he'd put on red or black. And if he won, he put the money back in his pocket and played with his winnings for the night. And if he lost, he just hung out and drank free soda. And that was his strategy. He said, if I'm going to win or lose, I want to know right away, and then I can enjoy myself.
Yeah, sure. You're not toiling over whether or not you can get some money out of the thing.
He would have a lot of fun, even on nights that he lost, because he would just hang out with us, and you know, he didn't have the whole stress of pressing the button over and over again.
Yeah, right. Well, and seeing, like, I always go in with, like, say, hey, we're going to the casino for a little bit. All right, I got $75. I'm gonna play with this just in slots. If I win $50. I'm done. And that's just an example. Maybe sometimes it'd be like, if I win $40 or whatever, I'd be like, if I win this much, I'm done. And also, if I lose all $75, I'm done. And that was always how I kind of dealt with casinos. It's like, I'm going to either win this much and be done with it, or lose this much and be done with it. And I never had a bad time at a casino. It took me a while. The first time I had ever really gone, it was when I was... I used to kind of be independent, like a merchandiser guy, where you'd go into grocery stores and fill shelves and stuff, but as a vendor as opposed to a grocery store employee. And one of our grocery stores was kind of close to a casino, and the casino served lunch and everything. So one day we went out there, had lunch, and then did a little gambling. And that day I won like $280, and I was jazzed, man. I was like, this is great. And I was like, oh, I got that fever. So the next day we went out and had lunch at the casino. And I'm like, man, that's gonna happen again. And I lost all $280 as well as an extra $200 on top of that. And I was like, oh, this is the reality of gambling.
Yeah. You see how big those places are? They don't get that big by giving you all the money.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that was my lesson in how to deal with casinos. And from that moment forward, I developed that set of rules for myself. Like, this is how much you can lose. This is how much you can win, and you're done. Otherwise, like you said, sit around and drink the free beer or soda or whatever.
Right. And Travis, so do you think that we'll ever find out anything more, or do you think that we're just done talking about that?
No. I mean, I assume you've seen House of Cards, haven't you?
No.
Well, if you've seen House of Cards, like, it's all the political underdealings and how bad Kevin Spacey's character was. Like, those people in those positions of power do not get caught for things like that. I mean,
they just say, yeah, we don't talk about that now.
Right. And what you can, I mean, even in our current political landscape, you can catch people on the phone doing shady things. There can be people saying, hey, this guy did this shady thing, or this gal did this shady thing. And it pretty much doesn't. Like, nothing happens. Like, they're like, oh, that sucks. The only time anything happens, like a sexual scandal with, like, I think there was like a recent congresswoman or senator or something that had inappropriate relationship with like a staffer or something. And she resigned. I assume they had more on her than that. They were just like, hey, we got this dirt on you. You should probably like get out of office. And she's like, oh, shit, I'll admit to this one thing so nobody ever finds out about this other thing. They're in too high profile of a setting to be caught for these things. Like, there's so many people that will cover up all of these things. So if the Clintons, seriously, if the Clintons were actually involved with this guy's death, that'll never come out ever.
It'd probably be like the end of the Dark Knight, like when they kill Two-Face because Two-Face had Commissioner Gordon's son held hostage.
Oh, right.
They're like, Oh, guys, we can't let the people know that Two-Face had the kid hostage. We'll just say that Batman killed him.
Yeah, otherwise they won't believe in our system.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, could you imagine if they found out that Hillary Clinton had a man murdered in prison so that he wouldn't spill the dirt on.
I would really love to see that play out, because it would be absolute madness.
All the pedophile trips that former President Bill Clinton took.
And everything from the time those people took any kind of power would like be nitpicked, and they'd go back through all the time and they'd be like, well, we got this one. So then people would stop protecting them, I think, like if it actually came out and they were actually being prosecuted and it was actually going to be like, I feel like then that's when things like that become declassified, and anybody that was protecting those people would finally be like, no, not protect them anymore. And everything would just spill out.
I mean, like,
all the decades,
the pizza stuff. I mean, it's so absurd, Travis, that people just discount it and say, there's no way that happened. That's absurd. But I mean, what if we found out that all of it is real?
Right. Yeah. Like it's so absurd that there's no possible way it could be true. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's the key to hiding these things. Like there's no way this could be true.
Actually is sex perverts that go rape children under a pizza place.
Yeah, it's like their special sex dungeon.
Like, that's crazy, but maybe it's just crazy enough to be real.
We live in a world where they smuggle people over in shipping containers.
Yeah, like a whole vat of them.
Like vats, if we did, like the UK where that that truck was found. There's all those dead Chinese people in the back of it, or whatever, and they're like prosecuting somebody for trafficking them. But like, yeah, it's like we live in a world where shit like that happens. So you can't tell me that it's not plausible that this sex trafficking, some of this shit, leads to high profile people in the bottom of a pizza joint.
Right, because there's no other reason to get really powerful. Unless you can start doing the shit you want to do, which is probably stuff that other people wouldn't think is great. But what are they going to do about it? They're just a bunch of pores.
Right. And that's like, I feel like, you know, and it's been a plot of many movies and things too, like the Surviving the Game or Hard Target. It's like, oh, these are these rich, powerful people, you know, and it's not like they've always had a desire to hunt people, but they're so rich that they can hunt people. So why wouldn't they? Just like the big game hunters, like you're so rich. I've never really wanted to shoot a lion, but I'm rich enough where I have the opportunity to shoot a lion. So why wouldn't I spend my money and do that?
I've just gotten to a point where like the only thing that'll get me rock hard is doing shit I'm not supposed to do.
Oh, the only way I can get off is slitting a chimpanzee's throat.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, when I was working at the foundry, I didn't have opportunities to just murder endangered species. And so,
but now that I got a little coin,
if I'm just going to do the same shit, what am I going to watch the new Christmas movie with Bill Hader and Anna Kendrick on Disney Plus, Travis? Is that what I'm going to do? No, I worked my ass off to get here so that I could go kill a white tiger.
Yeah, that watching that movie on Disney Plus is for the poors who would like work 50-60 hours a week at a job they hate, and the only solace that they have to take refuge in is to sit their fat asses on the couch, drink a beer, and watch some shitty original programming.
Do I look like some cabbage boiler, Travis?
I didn't have macaroni and cheese for dinner four nights this week, you son of a bitch. I'm gonna go shoot myself a giraffe.
Travis, I'm gonna tell you what we're gonna do. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk to Tim Starnes. He wrote a book. It's a cookbook, Travis. So stick around. We'll be back.
Katy Perry is John Bonet. Strange
And now, another wheelbarrow full of Dick's phone scam with the king of pranks, Travis Hultz.
Calling Hobby Lobby, this is Armita. How may I help you today?
Hi, can I have the stencil department, please?
Give me one second, okay?
Sure.
This is Noreen.
Hi, Noreen. I was really procrastinating this year. My kids had left an assignment sheet in their binder. We needed to do like a hand turkey kind of diorama kind of thing. And before I came down there, I just wanted to see if you guys had any hand turkey stencils.
No, we don't.
You don't have any
hands.
We're
also closed.
Oh, you are closed now? Well,
yeah,
what time do you?
At 8.
Oh, at 8 o'clock. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You don't
try Michael's.
Michael's might have some.
I would try there. Yeah.
Do you know if they're
open?
They are still open.
No,
okay,
I don't
thanks.
Go in there that often.
Oh. No, I understand. All right. Well, thanks for your help. I'll try to give Michael's a call to see if they have those hand turkey stencils. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
ABBA has 8 albums worth of content, and Amanda Seyfried has literally nothing else going for her. So get ready, moviegoers, because next summer, Universal Pictures presents Mamma Mia 3. Here we go again.
Oh, I hope people care about deep cuts. We've burned all the good ones.
Hear Meryl Streep perform less than ideal covers to B-sides like King Kong's song that very loosely tie in to a pretty weak plot. Sophie, I'm also your dad!
Jesus, Mom!
What can I say? I'm a huge slut.
Waterloo!
I was defeated.
You won the war.
Waterloo! Promise to love you forevermore. Waterloo! Couldn't escape if I wanted to. Waterloo, knowing my fate is to be with you.
Mamma Mia 3, here we go again. Coming soon.
WFOD!
Ever been using your phone's GPS and thought to yourself, this bitch don't know me? Who gives her the right to tell me where to go? Maybe it's time you get the directions from a friend.
In half a mile, keep right!
Go to WFODix.com and look for Waze under the Extras tab.
In 0.1 miles, turn left, and then turn right.
Mike is the driving companion you've always wanted. Get him today.
Turn left.
Hello, this is Ken from Michael's. How can I help you?
Hi there. I'm really hoping you can help me. Is there anybody in the stationery or the stencil department still?
No. Maybe I can help you.
Well, I just got off. I know it's kind of last minute. I was just calling. Me and my kids have to make a project for their school, and I know it's last minute. Do you guys have any hand turkey stencils left? Do you know before I come down?
Which kind of stencils?
For hand turkeys.
Hand turkey? Oh, like for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, for Thanksgiving.
We actually don't have a lot of Thanksgiving stuff.
I knew it was last minute.
Sorry. Oh, no, it's okay. We have a stencil area that we kind of skipped over. Thanksgiving was kind of like Halloween and Thanksgiving got lumped together and Christmas took over.
Okay, so Hunter, don't have any of the stencils left. All right, well,
no.
I really appreciate your help. I guess we'll have to figure something else out. I don't know what we're going to do last minute, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Have a good
bye.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye.
King of Pranks!
Come then. Let's go home. Once again, WFOD. wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Welcome back. Our guest tonight is Tim Starnes. He is the owner of Ethereal Crack Ghost Tours, and he has a new book coming out called Agony, Suffering Yesterday, Entertaining Today. For more information on his goings-on, go to etherealcrack.com. Guys, Tim Starnes is here. Hello, Tim.
Hey.
So the book describe it as being a cookbook, but it's like got a narrative to it.
It is very difficult even for me to explain, so get that right off the bat for you.
I read your description of that book like 5 times, and I still couldn't. All I got was that it was a cookbook.
So there's time travelers, and the time travelers go through time and find all the diseases that people get and make recipes. I hope to avoid said diseases.
Well, if you felt that way, imagine trying to pitch this book to publishers. Essentially, yes, it starts in 1400. It goes to the year 2000. So each chapter is a century, 14, 15, 16, yada, yada. There's recipes in each chapter, but these recipes are pulled from like major historical disasters. The easy one for me to use is in the 1900 chapter. There's Titanic, Hindenburg, and the Orient Express. Of course, Murder on the Orient Express didn't actually happen, but I still use it anyway. most of these, if not all, really, I should say all of these recipes are pulled from historical texts. So, for example, the menus of the Hindenburg and Titanic, the last nights they were still traveling, are preserved. They're out there. The first cookbooks appeared in, some say, in late 1300, but many say early 1400. So those were pulled directly from sources.
So what did they eat the last night on the Titanic?
Well, it depends on what class you were in. Third class, basically the dirt poor people, that would be Jack if you're watching the movie Titanic. It's going to be pretty simple. It was usually the same meal pretty much every night. Really, you're looking at the most bare bones basic boiled potatoes. I saw a hash served quite a few times. You're looking at basically boiled vegetables, some sort of very salty meat, and that's about it. If you're second class, I call it Golden Corral food. So it's the generic baked chicken, stuff kind of like that. And then, of course, if you're first class, it's going to be all sorts of weird gelatin. I can't even begin to describe to you the amount of weird things that were served. A couple things that people always turn their nose up at is calf's foot jelly was on the menu for the first class. That is basically you take a cow's foot, you stick it in a pot, you boil it, add gelatin, wham bam, you've got calf's foot jelly.
So it's just stuff that rich people eat to say that they ate it.
Essentially, it's like rich people taking care of their pets now. You charge them $5,000 for a Camille scented chew toy, and they pay for it just to show that, yes, they can pay for it.
I feel like that's the right thing to do, though. I mean, they're taking that calf's foot. They're getting use out of the entire cow that way.
Good, good. Fair point. that's good.
That's sort of some of that philosophical part of the book. A lot of it, people could say, you know, this could be potentially offensive. But the thing is I always like making people kind of look at things that they'd be a little bit squeamish or weird about and sort of face it and say, hey, you know, this, I mean, it's real life. You know, we have to smell the daisies at some point. So might as well look it in the face and get used to the idea.
Like that monkey brain soup scene from Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom.
Oh, well, I was thinking the Faces of Death tapes, but you're right.
There's the one thing, and it wasn't on Faces, it was on Traces of Death, and I'm not even sure which number it was, but when they actually took the blowtorch to the live pig, whether that it was real or not, it still like penetrates my nightmares.
Now I've read some stuff that said the animal stuff was real, and a lot of these B movies, the animal stuff unfortunately is real. Human stuff, not quite so much, of course.
Like Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah, people believe that was real. And I remember reading somewhere that the filmmakers had to go back and show how the effects were done to prevent being tried for, you know, actually doing something along those lines.
Yep, I've heard the same things. So you started this cookbook out at 1400, so you really missed a huge opportunity to do recipes from the time of the Black Plague.
Well, they're in there.
Excellent.
Yes, that piece of the chapter is a bit of a gag. So they stop in at a poorhouse in Italy at the time, a plague house. So people just lounging around, coughing up blood and mucus and the such. There's only one recipe in that section, and it's for basically boiled cabbage soup, which is essentially cabbage, water, boil it, serve it. Because if you're poor and you've got the plague, you're not going to be doing much.
I mean, Tim, this sounds like a hell of a cookbook, man.
The idea is to whip this up and serve it, and then after everyone eats it, now if they enjoyed it or not, because there's no spices in it, if you're in the further back chapters, say 1400, that's a different story. But you serve it, and then you say, hey, guys, I completely fooled you. You just had a full course of 1400s food that happened during major historical disasters. So I hope you enjoyed tonight. Now go home.
So Tim, can you trace to where this all got to you? Like, what made all this stuff your thing? You do the ghost tours, you write books about the plague. Did something jump out at you as the thing that got you into all this?
Yes and no. Everyone always really hopes that I have a spectacular origin story for all of this. And quite frankly, I don't have it, and I don't feel like lying because it's too much to keep up with a lie, and I'm too lazy for that. Really, the ghost tour idea just came out of, I thought, hey, that's a good idea to try. I've always been sort of an entertainer-style character. I'm a playwright even before all of the ghost tour stuff happened, so I'm always looking for some new idea to entertain a crowd and, let's face it, make a buck, because without the bucks, I can't do anything else.
Right.
So really, the ghost tour company arrived just as an idea to raise funds to do other things with. It sort of spread from there. I have one of those weird personalities where when one tiny thing works, I tend to blow it way out of proportion. So that one ghost tour in my hometown of Waxhaw, North Carolina, grew to 50 all over North and South Carolina.
So you take people out and you tell a bunch of stories about like gruesome murders and stuff. It's like an hour long walking tour. Like, is there like a really famous murder that happened in was it Waxhaw?
Yes, and no, there is nothing spectacular about it. That's where we can sort of sit back about this and laugh. Many of these small towns, at least in North and South Carolina, I of course don't know. I can't give a generalization for the entire U.S.
Yeah.
But a lot of these towns were formed after the Civil War happened. So really, if you're looking at it, no more than about 125 years old. My hometown itself was incorporated in 1889, a little over 100 years. So that's not a whole lot of time for things to happen.
I mean, certainly some people have been dying, I imagine.
Well, yes, very much so, but not on the grand scale you would need for a ghost tour in most cases. Yeah. Of course, there's a tour out in Gaffney, South Carolina, where the Gaffney Strangler was. There are outliers. In some spots in North Carolina, Bigfoot has been seen most often. So there's some, you know, outliers there to use. But really what it's doing is, the reason it's been pared down to an hour is just because that's people's attention spans nowadays. And in the beginning of this, I looked and said, hey, if I have a tour group of 10 people all walking around looking at their cell phones, that's going to look majorly stupid. So I pared it down to an hour, but that was an unintentionally ingenious idea. With that, the tour has to move very fast. So we get about 10 stories in. That leaves about 5 minutes a story, give or take.
Sure.
So we throw a little bit of anything and everything in. For example, in the tour in Waxhaw, one of the very last, if not the very last, witch trials in the United States actually might have happened very close by. Now, when you say a witch trial, you think people getting burned at the stake. Now, technically, yes, that is correct. That's a witch trial. But if you're looking at the dictionary definition, which is the use of paranormal means or intervention to determine guilt or innocence, that widens up the book a bit. So we get into that and explain that. In places where UFOs have been seen, we will get into that. So really, it's a little bit anything and everything, but it's going to be very sort of localized to that area. In every tour, we don't go more than 15 miles out for material. So it's stuff a lot of the times you'll have to drive after the tour to go see. But you've been sufficiently filled in where you'll know everything you need to know before you go out to see it.
It reminds me a lot of the opening of House of a Thousand Corpses, when they stop to get gas and then Captain Spaulding is in the gas station. And they're like, ooh, we want to see Dr. Satan. And he gives him a free bag of chicken and says, here's a map.
That's an excellent compliment. I thank you for that. That's the first time that's ever been said. And you're now my favorite person for the rest of the night. Sincerely, thank you.
So, I mean, has the influx of true crime fascination, that's only done good for you, I imagine, right?
I would say yes. However, truthfully, at the end of the day, I've run the ghost tour company for about 3 years. So there's a bit of, you know, length of time for me to kind of sit back and try and think about it. I quite frankly believe that if the Roman Colosseum was a thing today, people would still go. People are just naturally in that basic lizard brain section that we have all deep down inside, no matter how much you want to hide it. There's something in that likes seeing violence. I don't blame it on media or anything like that. I just think it's the way human minds are. I think that humans are drawn to what scares them, and what scares most people, animals, death itself, because you can't explain what happens afterwards.
Do you think that maybe people think like, oh, well, obviously this person had a worse day than me, and maybe it makes you feel better?
There's that,
like,
too.
It's a comforting thing.
Yeah, a lot of it's probably like just like when you drive by an accident, you can't help yourself but look, because everybody's so curious about death because we have no idea what it is that. Maybe if we get a glimpse of it, you know, we can maybe wrap our minds around it a little bit, right?
I think that's definitely true. I think humor is inexplicably tied to horror. That's why some of the best horror movies often have bits of humor thrown in. Again, because there's some weird piece of human psychology that just relates them together. And most naturally, I think people tend to, when they're nervous, lead toward laughter. I know I personally do. I've been banned from going to weddings and funerals in my friends and family circle because I always accidentally laugh. And it's not because I think it's funny. It's because I get nervous and then I start laughing. So I think those bits and pieces are all inexplicably tied together. You can't do away with it. The only time you'll do away with it is when you're dead and you don't know the difference. Some people are more inclined to just accept the fact. So there's me, who, you know, will go through all these all this research on these horrible things and not be affected by it, but then look at it and think, okay, well, this cold I've got is not quite as bad as laying on a straw mattress and coughing up blood, so, you know, I've got something going there. But then there are some people who will recoil in horror and go, how could you even possibly read about this or write about this? And I'm not impervious to it either. There's a book called The Butchering Art by a lady, I'm forgetting her first name, but her last name is Fitz Harris, I believe. Butchering Art, I know it's the title of the book. I'm a big fan of audiobooks. The book is on surgery in Victorian England, particularly, going from, if I remember correctly, early 1800 onward. And in the first couple chapters, there's some very descriptive and, quite frankly, gruesome descriptions of surgery at the time, which was basically just lobbing off arms and legs with a saw. It's pretty much all there was to it. But I nearly threw up listening to it, and I was at my day job at the time and had to run to the bathroom. So I'm not impervious to it, and I don't think anybody is. It's just, what is your personal threshold? And I think people like testing it. Obviously, mine is graphic Victorian surgery.
Really had to dive deep for your threshold, huh?
Well, you got that right. And that's partially what inspired in the Civil War section of the book, the 1800s, before the recipes even start, there's a picture of a soldier getting his leg sawed off. So that opens up the chapter. So I'm willing to use my own personal experience to sort of fuel the book as well.
Ethereal crack ghost tours. It's all around North and South Carolina, if anybody's out that way. When's your busy season? Is it coming up when everybody's home for the holidays? Or what, did it just go by? Or
believe it or not, October is a bit of a dead period, no pun intended. Our main season is really whenever it gets warm after Christmas through October. October dies down. Then we see a bit of traffic right at Thanksgiving, right at Christmas, and then it dies down until it gets warm again. So really, it's sort of a holiday business, and I think that's because it's when people are either out of school and work during the summer, and when people bring family in from out of town at Christmas and Thanksgiving. It's get out of my house for at least an hour, leave. I want to be able to use the bathroom by myself, thank you. So, you know, ship your awful relatives out on a $10 ghost tour and say, have fun.
There you go.
Like I said, get to use the bathroom by yourself for a minute.
Tim, you got like a social media, like a Twitter or Facebook, something like that? Or is that not something you do?
Of course, website, www.etherealcrack.com. You can sign up for a ghost tour or sign up for the newsletter about the book.
So you got like a mailing list?
Yes, it's an email list. The book's official release date has not been given to me by the publisher. I know it is October of next year. So when the official release date is told to me, I will immediately release it to the masses through
Sounds
the email
good.
List.
Yeah, we'll pass that along, of course.
And I do plan for an audiobook, so there will be an offer for a free audiobook for people who are smart enough to sign up.
That's a good deal there. Cool, man. In October, when it comes out, we should do it again.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be glad to come back on.
Sounds good. Cool. I appreciate your time, Tim.
Thanks a lot, Tim. You're
welcome. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, Travis, I like that Tim. He's a good guy.
He would have been a perfect guest for the old spooky month.
It didn't pan out, Travis. It didn't pan out, maybe next spooky month. You know, because what we're doing, Travis, is we're building relationships.
That's true.
We're harnessing our virtual
Rolodex.
Yeah. We're creating a stable of like-minded individuals that we can gel with.
That's right. A web of contact.
Yeah. Because, you know, doing this, Travis, doing this as long as we've done it, we should have more friends.
Yeah, they do say that surrounding yourself with people is very healthy and that, you know, being alone is not. So, I mean, I feel like this is the only reason I do the show is to try to have some human interaction outside of my
community.
Yeah, like a sense of community. And, you know, I feel like our guest is now part of that.
Tim Starnes, you are now in our stable.
Mm-hmm.
Patiently await our call. Travis, do you have what you'd say is a pick of the week, something you want the people to know about, Travis?
I do. I have a pick of the week. I stumbled upon this motion picture. I've been getting Blu-rays from the library because a lot of these movies that I don't get to the theater to see, which happens more and more often, I don't want to wait for them to hit streaming channels. So I've been jumping onto the library thing and putting holds on books. Anyway, but the point is, I've been seeing a bunch of movie trailers because they actually have movie trailers in front of Blu-rays, and you know, not like they don't on streaming. But this movie called Searching. Starring John Cho, you know, of Harold and Kumar fame.
Which one was he?
Which one is he?
It's probably Harold, right? Because he's Asian guy. Kumar, that doesn't sound Asian.
Yeah, I feel like he's Harold. So this movie is
differently, I'd believe you, but...
Maybe let's just call him. He's one of those two guys. John Cho. Look him up.
He's Harold and or Kumar.
He's Harold and or Kumar. He likes White Castle. He saved Christmas and he escaped from Guantanamo Bay. But yeah, this movie is about a father whose 16-year-old daughter disappears. And the immediate police investigation kind of leads to a dead end. So he takes it upon himself to do a lot of the investigating just basically through her like online life, right? So he's like looking through her different accounts, like trying to track who she's talked to. She's talking to friends at school. But the cool thing about this, and there actually is a really cool twist towards the end, the cool thing about this movie is it's presented not as just like a regular narrative. The entire movie is told through like FaceTime phone calls, YouTube videos, interviews, texts. Every bit of this movie is filmed using like media. It's all this whole story is presented using like online and social media things, which is fascinating. And the movie itself is like really riveting. It's like a really cool thriller mystery, like what the hell's going on. But just the way that it's presented was really amazing. I really, really liked this movie and had no idea it existed. And it's available on DVD and Blu-ray. But also, if you have Stars, it's available on demand. So I highly recommend Searching.
Searching with John Cho.
John Cho.
Travis, pick of the week, Rick and Morty is back.
I saw that. Yeah, I'm very happy for all you Rick and Morty fans.
Season premiere was Sunday. It was great. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
If you've been living under a rock, you've been missing that Rick and Morty, it's back on. Like 200 and something days, like, or no, 700 something days. It was like 2 years.
Really?
That show was off the air. Yeah. So
they took a 2 year break.
Right. They took like a 2 year break between season two and season three too. Like they take like crazy breaks, and then they're like, okay, you get 10. I think this is like you get 6.
Isn't that show insanely popular? Why are they taking 2 year breaks?
They have a lot of, I think, like too much artistic integrity, Travis. Like, really want it to be good.
Like Chappelle. That's why he just stopped doing the Chappelle show, because he's like, man, I don't want to compromise this. I'm done.
Right. Yeah, I think they signed a contract for like 100 episodes, and at this rate, they're going to be long dead before they hit. But yeah.
Well, good on them for following their blueprint.
Right. So, guys, that's it. Thanks. Not live next week. So if you're listening to the podcast version, there will be a podcast, no live show. And yeah, that's it. Bye. That's my mama. That's Travis. Do you have a thing that you say at the end of shows? You don't, do you?
Waka waka waka.
There we go. We'll be right back.
lots of good stuff happening. It's going to be juicy. You'll see. All right. Bye for now. Take good care of yourself. Bye.